This is Graham. He's new to PokerStars. Graham doesn't know it yet, but he's a VIP. He's entitled to claim points against any number of rewards in the PokerStars VIP program. From PlayStations to plasmas, from Porsches to seats at major on- and offline poker tournaments. You see, he started collecting VIP points the minute he joined PokerStars as a real money player. Because we don't think you should have to apply or be in the know to earn rewards. He'll be very excited when he finds out. Just you wait and see. Wait for it. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP and find out why all other reward schemes seem just a little, well, inaccessible. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's September 18th, 2009, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet and on the planet, which I guess is everything. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Jetlag Long.
Jetlag. Wait a minute, now Ohio, is Ohio in a different time zone?
It is.
What, 1 hour?
It is Buckeye time.
But
yes.
You know what? So. And then I know you're going to get to the round that you went to travel in the Ebro too, Panhandle, but it's the same time zone. What jet lag? That's not even close.
Actually, Ebro is Central Time, so that I'm car lag then. How's that? That make you feel better, buddy? Car lag.
Scott car lag long. Yeah, you were a traveling fool, man.
Yeah, I'm happy to be finally home. It's been almost a week. I mean, this has been a weird trip. You know, I flew up to Ohio to watch the Buckeyes lose that heartbreaker to USC. And then, because it's football season, I'm traveling a lot. You know, going to St. Louis in a couple weeks, too. Looking forward to that. Trying to get some poker in there while I watch the Packers go to 3-0. But so I flew up to Ohio, and I flew back, and my wife picks me up at the airport, right? And we immediately leave from the airport straight up to the Panhandle, another 6-hour drive. I never went home to change my undies or anything.
Oh, my God.
And then hung out up there, which is, it's a nice trip, but it's just a long drive. So we're just so happy to finally be back home and relaxing in my own bed.
Well, did you get any playing in when you went to Ebro?
I did. Actually, they're doing their Emerald Coast Poker Championship, which they do every year, and unfortunately, it always they just have such bad luck. They always end up scheduling at the same time that the Beau Rivage has their big September event or whatever their fall event is. So
Gulf Coast Poker Championships.
So I feel bad for them because it'd be a great event for some of those people to come to after Biloxi. But, they had 70 folks for the event on Tuesday, which was one of their lead-up events. So that's not bad for, it's a nice room out. It's just out in the middle of nowhere, and they're trying hard up there to get people in. So you get 70 in, and, not a bad little turnout, I thought. And, of course, I finished 16th out of 70. And then as soon as I go out, pretty soon after that, they cut a deal to pay down the whole final table. So asses. Went out on a freaking hand when a guy with queen 10 calls my all-in with pocket when I had pocket queens. Ugh. Still sick about that. I don't get upset. I don't go on tilt like you do, Chris.
Uh-huh.
But I went on tilt after that. Good thing I had sense not to get back into a cash game and blow all my money, but...
Wait. You can't be on tilt and not play.
That's not tilt.
Yeah, of course.
All right, okay.
The whole point is that you're tilting, off all your chips. I mean, if you're not giving any money away during this tilt, then it's just a big, spastic kind of, temper tantrum.
All right. So it's not just the emotion of tilting. It's actually physically tilting.
Exactly.
Okay, gotcha. All right, well, I guess I wasn't tilting then, so. So I keep my streak alive. but this tournament, every time I go up to that room, they're doing something a little bit different. And, it's run by a really good guy, Dennis, who was on our cruise, actually. And he came from the California card rooms. And so I thought maybe he brought this with him, but it turns out it wasn't. One of his tournament directors came up with it. But you know, they start, you know, when people get eliminated, the tables collapse, right?
Yeah.
And almost every tournament I've been in, they usually either come over with a stack of seat cards and throw them on the table, and you pick one, and that's where you go.
Right.
Or, you know, they draw for cards, and that's where you go, or something like that. But in this tournament, when they collapse the tables, they halted play at the table that they were going to collapse, right?
Right.
And then they took the player who was in the worst position at the table, you know, right before the blinds or in the blinds.
Right.
And they moved them to a similarly bad position at another table in the tournament. And after they sat that person, then they came back and got the next person in the worst position and found him the second worst position somewhere in the tournament, all the way around the table. So if you were, you know, on the button, they wanted to get you back in a position where you were on the button. And I'd never seen that done before.
So essentially they're doing table balancing, only doing it with that one whole table.
Exactly, yeah. They've extended that whole, you know, when you get down to like two tables left and you want to be sure the tables are even, and they, you know, they move a big blind to a big blind. And they're doing it for the entire tournament.
Wow, man, that's really cool, but I see two problems with it, and I'm assuming you're going to agree with me here. One, if you don't have a big enough staff, it could take forever. And two, if it does take forever, and you're in a blind, you know, situation where, you know, they're escalating or whatever, and you got a short stack, you're going to be furious that you got to sit there and wait for a position to open up that you can sit down in when you want to be playing cards and trying to double up before the levels go up, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, I think it's a good idea, and they'll need to refine it as they go forward, and maybe they will. I mean, the problem was they only had two tournament directors seating you.
Hmm.
So, you know, you're right, it took me, I didn't look at the clocks, so I don't remember exactly how long it took, but I was one of the people in the better positions, I was like on the button.
Right.
So I think it took me almost 3 minutes to get my new seat. And with 20-minute levels, you know, that's a good chunk of a level. You know, fortunately I had a good enough stack that didn't really bother me, and actually it was nice to kind of take a break and not have to, you know, worry about things for a little bit.
Yeah.
But I can imagine if you're a short stack and you want to get that, you know, get a hand in before the blinds go up, you're going to be telling, you know, Joe Tournament Director to hurry up a little bit. So I think that might be the way to go. And I don't know how they would handle it. I mean, obviously it's a smaller room. It's a 70-player tournament. I don't know what you would do if it was, you know, they sold the place out and there are 30 tables. I mean, because, you know,
yeah.
I actually got moved to the farthest table away from my table. So, I mean, even after they figured out where to put me, then I had to truck all the way over there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's an interesting idea, you know. And I talked to them afterwards about, you know, why they did it and what they came up with. And they essentially really didn't, I don't think they really knew. It wasn't like, you know, hey, we were at a tournament and they did like that, so we did it. They kind of came up with it on their own, I think. And they said the players are real receptive to it because it's more fair. And, you know, I got to say, you know, all of us, I think, have been in the scenario where, you know, we just posted the big blind.
Yeah.
And then the table breaks and they move us and we end up right back in the big blind again. And that, you know, nothing sucks worse than that, other than somebody calling your pocket queens with queen 10 off. You know, so interesting. You know, like I said, if they can revise it a little bit and speed it up a little bit, it might be an interesting thing to do. I can never say doing it at the World Series, though. Can you imagine the...
Oh, my God.
Picking you up from the Amazon room and making you walk over to the Brazil room. And
oh my God.
Even with 90-minute levels there, you probably missed an entire level.
Well, I tell you what, though. I would much rather last as long as you did than not last long at all in a tournament. Which I think happens to you quite often.
Well, you know, just recently I've played in a couple of tournaments, and I had one online where I was like third hand and I went out. And then, but last week I was over at Tampa Bay Downs and I sat down on a sit and go, and this is made worse by the fact that I waited like a half an hour for the sit and go to go. You know, you're like on the list and you're like, you know, we just need three more people to get the sit and go going. And I'm like, please, three people. Show up. I should probably just get up and leave. But at that point, then you feel invested.
Yeah.
You know, because if I get up now, then all the other five guys are going to like, oh, man, now I got to get four people. So I felt invested, right?
Yep.
So I'm hanging out there. I finally get the sit and go going. And big blind special, two clubs. I turn the club flush, get it all in. Guy calls me. He has a higher flush. Boom. Bingo, bango, bongo. One hand.
Your sit and go turned into a sit and went.
Sit and flash, yeah.
First it was a sit and wait, then it was a sit and go, and then it was a sit and flash. Sit and gone. No.
Sit and gone. I like that. There we go. Now, I know people are famous for saying, you know, hey, if I don't make the money, then I want to be the first one out. I don't want to sit there and play that entire tournament and get nothing out of it. But, you know, I want at least to get two hands in. Is that too much to ask?
Man, that's brutal. How high were your clubs?
8 high, so, but, you know.
So now somebody had limped, and that was the guy that knocked you out? He's a limper, or was he the small blind?
No, actually, I was under the gun. You're going to like this move. I think I was under the gun. Actually, I had 9 high. I was under the gun with 9 of clubs, 8 of clubs.
Okay.
And this is one of those six-handed sit-and-goes. And I've been playing a lot of these lately. I've been doing really well at them. And the part of the reason is that I'm loosening up and being a little more aggressive in these than I am in 10-handeds.
Uh-huh.
And when I really should be more aggressive in all multi-tables, even if it's 10-handed. But six-handed, I feel a little better about doing it. So I opened raise for 3X with 9-8. Suited, and got two callers, and then put out a pretty big bet, actually, continuation bet on the flop when two clubs came, hoping that, you know, I could hit that club and then my hand would be a little concealed, right?
Right.
And, well, doesn't really matter to conceal it when you got a guy with like a king club.
And I thought you had said that it was like a big blind special, that you just had two clubs.
Yeah, I thought it was too, but I thought it was an 8-high. I'm confusing with some other bad tournaments I've played lately.
Oh,
but
now the car lag is coming into play.
Yeah,
in our show.
Yeah.
Well, I'm impressed that you raised with 9-8 of clubs under the gun. It's about time.
You know, thank you, buddy. I'm listening to our good friend Lee Childs, and, you know.
Of course, it was six-handed, so you better raise with that hand, I guess. But.
But, you know, then I get home that night, and I played in one of those 22-buck PLO8 tournaments that I like playing on Stars. And very first hand, double up. Guy moves all in with a less premium hand. I have the nuts. I think it may even nut.
Wow.
Boom. 6,000 chips just like that. So, you know, I guess it balances out, right?
No, that's not a wash.
Not a wash?
No, that's not a wash. You have no chance of winning in one, and you have still only a slim chance of winning in the other. I don't see how those are equal.
Okay, all right. I was just trying to make myself feel better. But
here I am again, always trying to knock you down.
Thanks for sticking that screwdriver right through me.
Sorry, buddy.
But you know what? The tournaments that the Antiap Nation likes to play, of course, our Ape series, and our main topic today is on Power Tips for Raz.
Yes!
In preparation for not only the Apes event coming up, but also for the infamous free roll that will be the next tournament that the Antiap Nation will get together. And, you know, there's been a little concern over the free roll. You know, we got all these interlopers and stuff, and, you know, a couple folks on the forum are up in arms about it. So, you know, I spent some time trying to talk to him and trying to figure out, you know, what really is the root issue here. And what I've learned from a couple of these folks is it's not so much that they're disappointed about having to fight off these people to get the free seats. It's that they just feel like they're getting cheated out of a night with the Antiap Nation.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, you just sit down at the table and you want to play with folks that either you know or you have something in common with, and you can kind of talk about the show or something or the magazine. And, you know, these Brazilians and Russians and, you know, those folks, you know, they're just not interested, you know. So that turns out to be the issue. And, you know, so I kind of suggest to these folks, you know, hey, you know, there's no shame in creating your own Antiap fan series and create your own night, you know, and make the password wherever you want to be. Do whatever you want to do to keep out the unwanteds.
Yeah.
But to sit down and hang out with the Antiap Nation, I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, and it's not unprecedented. We had the Chimp series a few years back,
right?
And so that worked out well.
Yep, and Poker Slut, which isn't actually an Antiap event, but a lot of Antiapers play in it. So there's a couple other tournament series out there, and now we get a new one that came out of this. It's called Zorag's Intergalactic Tournament Series, and I'll let you pause to do the acronym there on your own to figure out what that is, but they launched the first one this week, I think, and go to the forum at antiapmagazine.com/forum, and you get all the information on that. And you know, if other folks want to start their own Antiap fan tournaments, by all means, do it and post it on the forum. And you know, you and I will jump in these things when our schedule permits. And you know, it's good that what everybody wants is just, you know, to hang out with the Antiap Nation. Nothing wrong with that.
I tell you, that series gives a whole new meaning to the one that pops on the bubble.
Oh, excellent. A little softball lob there, too, and I kept rambling. We're just waiting to get that in.
I didn't want to cut you off, you know. I wanted to make sure you got your thought out before I said what I had to say.
Awesome, buddy, awesome.
Well, you know, our listeners and our readers always give us a lot of content and stuff to talk about, and one of our listeners asked me about if I had ever seen that show that's out now called 2 Months, 2 Million.
Uh-huh.
And it's about these four young guys, young internet poker pros. They're really young, you know, and I think we've talked a little bit about it in the show, but they, you know, they go to Vegas for the summer to rent a house, and, you know, they try to make $2 million over a 2 month period. It's like a reality show, and they follow them on all of their, you know, escapades. And one of the things that they do too is the guy who loses, the most during a week or doesn't win whoever comes in last that week out of the four guys, the other three guys come up with like a dare that they have to do. So some of that stuff's kind of funny and everything. But, you know, I decided to watch the show and give it a chance. I've watched four episodes now. And you know what, Scott?
Four episodes. Wow. You're hooked.
I just can't relate anymore, man. I really can't. I really am old. You know, I celebrated my 39th birthday.
That's right.
Officially old. But to get to the point, the show really doesn't show hardly any poker at all. They kind of talk about life as poker players, you know, how miserable they are when they're running bad or how great they are when they're, but they really don't show any poker. They show, like, they'll show these guys sitting down with 20 screens up and even going against like David Benjamin or Phil Ivey or whatever, but they just show the avatar, they show the bet, they show how much they won or how much they lost, and that's it. There's no real poker in this show. So basically then I'm just sitting there watching, you know, a bunch of, you know, young kids, you know, saying what's funny, you know, their testosterone is at all-time high levels, and they're screaming at each other and running around trying to get dates. And I tell you one thing, though, this show has proven one thing to me, you know. If you have enough money, you can be the biggest, ugliest, klutziest dork on the planet, and you can still get laid. I mean, that's really all this show's about, is these kids trying to get dates, and it's like the most immature bullshit. You know, whatever you want to call it. I don't want to get too mouthy on the show today, but I don't know. I mean, I watched a few episodes, but really not enough poker to keep my interest, and I think that'll be the last I watch of it.
Ah, okay.
You should watch it.
Okay. It sounds like something more I would like to do.
Yeah, you're younger than me, so you might relate.
And speaking of young, our fledgling company is 1 year old.
Yes.
And I forgot to mention this in the notes, but we might as well let the listeners know that if you're in the Sarasota area, tomorrow, Saturday the 19th, our big anti-up first birthday bash from the magazine down at the One Eye Jackson Sarasota Kennel Club.
It's going to be awesome.
Get the boots off at, 1 p.m. or so? And
yep.
We got a big old anti-up sheet cake, so you can get your calories for the week. And if you're one of the first 50 people there, we're going to give you a little gift, which probably will be familiar to our podcast listeners. And, you know, play a tournament there, and if you knock us out, you get an extra prize thing like that. And it should be a good time.
Yeah, you knock us out, you get $60.
Yeah.
Bounties on our head.
Cold, hard cash.
You know what would be cool is if one of us knocked each other out. That would be cool.
So if you know, we're going to try that, too.
Yeah, I'm hoping they put us at the same table.
Yeah, maybe we'll end up at the same table. Fireworks will, too.
Oh, man. All right, well, let's see what's happening on the Ante Up news desk this week.
All right, well, speaking of reality shows, Chris, Maria Ho, and Tiffany Michelle are teammates on this year's Amazing Race, which premieres on CBS on September 27th. I think we knew that earlier, but now it's official.
It's official, and you and I, again, have not joined this show. I don't know what we're waiting for.
Oh, I think we're waiting on you.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I had my tape and everything, and I kind of photoshopped you into the tape for the audition, and apparently they didn't pick us, but I was just hoping to trick you on this show. You know, I watch every piece of garbage reality show on TV. I'm just a junkie.
Yeah.
But Amazing Race is by far my favorite, and it's just so much fun to watch. I can't say that this is going to enhance my enjoyment of it, but it's always nice to see poker players on reality shows, and particularly this one where there's some strategy involved, but it's not like kind of the gamemanship that, you know, Jean Robert had to play on Survivor and, you know, some of these other shows. So, but it will be interesting.
Well, let me know how they do, because I won't be watching.
All right, also, the rosters are set for the first Caesars Cup, a Ryder Cup-inspired poker tournament pitting 8 Americans versus 8 Europeans in London on September 25th. Daniel Negreanu was captain of the American team, and Annette Oberstred, who just turned 21, by the way.
That's close enough.
Close enough. Captain's European team. The competition has three parts, all played as doubles. Alternate bet, where one teammate plays pre-flop and flop, the other turn and river. Same stack, where teammates share stack, switching off after every two hands. And if necessary, just good old-fashioned heads up.
Okay, I have one problem with this.
Just one?
Just
That's
one.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah, just one complaint. Daniel Negreanu is Canadian.
Well, by birth.
He's Canadian, man. He's Canadian. I don't know how else to say it.
He probably has a dual citizenship, like we do. We're Americans and Floridians.
He can only play half the hands.
Yeah, there we go. Well, Canada's eventually just going to be a U.S. state anyhow, right?
So. Yeah. Oh my God.
But I kind of like how the double thing works out. So I don't think you and I would be good teammates.
Not at all.
Particularly thing.
Not at all.
Can you imagine one of us playing the pre-flop and the flop and the other one playing the turn of the river?
Oh, man, that would be a disaster.
We would have to have an ice pick on hand for us each to poke each other's eyes out. How would you play it that way? You put me in such a bad spot.
Oh, my God.
All right, and then finally, the finalists for this year's class of the Poker Hall of Fame have been announced. On the ballot are Barry Greenstein, Dan Harrington, Phil Ivey, Tom McAvoy, Men Nguyen, Scotty Nguyen, Daniel Negreanu of Canada, Eric Seidel, and Mike Sexton. The 30 voters that will cast their ballots have until October 2nd to do so, and the nominees mentioned on more than 75% of the ballots will be inducted. And also, in the announcement, they made a special mention of Tom Dwan, and I don't really know why they did this. I guess he got a lot of support in the lead-up.
Yeah, that online voting thing.
Right, right. And they wanted to go out of the way to kind of say, hey, well, they respect what he's done recently here. The Poker Hall of Fame is kind of a long-term body of work, and therefore he's not quite yet there to be considered. Tom Dwan? I mean, come on, the dude has had an amazing year. But
well, that's the problem when you open it up to guys who have control of the internet, and most of the guys who do that are 21, and they're all impressed with Tom Dwan.
Yeah, that's true.
He hasn't won anything. Sure, he makes a lot of money in cash games, but how many tournament titles does he have? He's only been playing. Most of the people on this list have been playing longer than he's been alive.
I think almost all of them have. Pretty much all Daniel. Of them.
Yeah, I mean, even Daniel might have been playing.
Or Phil Ivey. Yeah, those are two young guns here. But
yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. So I while I respect Tom Dwan, I think he's fantastic, and I love watching him play on TV. Give me a break. I mean, I understand the word fame is the root of famous. You know what I mean? But that's not that's not what they mean by Hall of Fame. So yeah. Let's move on.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot here, buddy. Who would you check on your ballot if you were one of these 30 people?
Easily Dan Harrington, Tom McAvoy, and Mike Sexton. Because I think that Harrington is pretty much not going to win anything else ever again.
so he's done.
Yeah, he's been around a long time. He's obviously earned it, those final tables he made and, of course, the bracelets he's won in the world title. McAvoy's got the world title, and now he's back in he's written so much, but now he's back in the spotlight again after winning the Champions Cup. And, and again, even though he won that, that's just an invitational thing. So I don't think that he's going to be winning anything again very soon. And Sexton he's not going to win anything. but he's done so much for poker that I think the other guys still will be playing for another 20 or 30 years. Even Barry, I think, will play for another 20 years. And I just think that those guys still have chances to win stuff and to do more and to make a more of an impression. So that's my reasoning behind them.
All right, and, so you've got to see the Hall of Fame.
What?
Go ahead.
Well,
go ahead.
Was just thinking three people. Those are the three. So if I had to go first, number one, I would probably put Harrington in first.
Well, you don't have to rank them. You just check. Okay. You check any or all of these. Is okay. My understanding of how the ballot works. So
yeah, I mean, I would think for me, I couldn't list all 10. I mean, you have to cut it off somewhere. I think all these guys are going to get in anyway. So I think this year I'll just give it to three of them and then do it that way every year. If I were a voter.
All right, so you kind of see the Hall of Fame as kind of like a nursing home that That you have to outlive your usefulness to the general community before you can be honored.
Well, you know, it always seems so odd when, like, you know, in the LPGA Hall of Fame and the woman wins her 30 tournaments and she's still got 20 years left and they're like, LPGA Hall of Famer Lorena Ochoa, who's 25. It's like, what? You know what I mean? So, I mean, otherwise, then you would put Tom Dwan in. You know what I mean? It makes no sense to me to have somebody so young in the Hall of Fame. It always seems like your career's over, and this is why we're enshrining you. You know, but if you're still playing, you know, it just makes no sense. Otherwise, you know, what about all the basketball players who are still playing right now who have, you know, Kobe Bryant? He's a Hall of Famer. Why don't put him in the Hall of Fame right now? Well, look, because there's a rule. You have to be retired, and you have to be 5 years out of the league. You know, it makes sense to me. So,
yeah, I guess that's the problem with poker is you can't really be retired officially. Yeah.
I know. So maybe they should have some sort of age limit or something, you know?
So you're doing some kind of artificial Hall of Fame qualification.
Yeah,
in my head.
Yeah, in my head.
Yeah. Well, lots of things going on in your head.
I wonder if we can listen to the hotline clip. That's going on.
Yeah, right now. I think we should probably do that.
All right. The phone number is 813-448-1120. And if you call it and we use it, we'll send you something nice. This one comes from our Apes winner. Who, you know what? We love it when our Apes winners call and leave a quote or a message, but sometimes they just don't have enough time to, or they're still drunk from celebrating and they forget to do it in time for the next show. So we want to give everybody their chance to be heard. So Poker Geek, who knocked me out last week, has something to say.
I'm just calling to let you know that I listened to your Power Omaha 8 tips 2 days after I played the event. But I did keep in mind that I tried to scoop the pot, and occasionally a high hand can win it. But you forgot the most important tip of all, and that's always make sure you get a royal flush when you need it.
You know, that is a wonderful power tip. We should probably add that to next year, because if we keep doing the same power tips, we're going to run out of them. So I will remember next year. I'm going to put a note here. I'm going to write down on my paper, always get a royal flush on the last hand. That is the most powerful tip.
That is sound advice.
All right, well, Poker Geek, I appreciate you already sending us your address. We'll get that banana and monkey out to you, and we'll also talk in the box because of your hotline call today. A wonderful hat from Twiff.com, one of our former real good sponsors, and you know, they did our little tournament chips for the cruise, and you know, they sent these wonderful hats for the cruise, and we had a couple left over. So
there you go.
Man. Now you got a hat that you can.
The rich get richer, Scott.
Exactly. We need a bigger box.
Oh, man.
Schneider there? No? Not really? Okay.
All right, well, this week's mailbag comes from Robert Arve, and it's on counterfeiting. Do you want to read it? You want me to read it?
Oh, why not? I'll read it.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, so he sent this in, and he says, please correct me if I'm wrong about the correct use of the term counterfeit in poker. And I love when people write us to have them correct the rights and wrongs, as if we're some kind of poker experts.
Yeah, I know.
I have a feeling we might, not necessarily agree on this one. all right, so anyhow, he wants to know what the correct term counterfeit is. He says, during a poker game today, a player was dealt pocket deuces. The board came up with two higher pair, 9-9-8-8 king. The player with a pocket ace won the hand 9-9-8-8 ace, and someone at the table said that the deuces had been counterfeited. Now, our hero in this hand disagrees, saying that counterfeit makes the board look like the actual hand you can play for the high, not better than. For example, if you hold ace-deuce and the flop is 3-4-5, you have a straight. The turn comes with a deuce, making the board deuce-3-4-5. Your straight has been counterfeited. So, set him straight, Chris.
Well, in my mind, anything that takes away the power of your hand and makes another hand better through this system, it's counterfeited. You know, you had your own two pair there, and when that eight came, you were counterfeited because a better two pair were on the board. So I think the person was counterfeited, to be honest with you.
Yep, I totally agree, and that's what I told him. So obviously it's a wonderful show when we both agree on something like this. But, you know, there's always these semantics.
Yeah.
You know, how we got into that whole trip and set thing.
I knew you were going to say that.
So, you know, maybe somebody's going to dig up a little-known corollary in the Faber-College poker handbook and send it to us this week. And, oh, no, you're wrong. Counterfeiting is specifically here. So that's what I'm going to be interested to find. So scour the Google and this week and let us know how we're wrong here. But yeah, I totally agree. You know, if your hand, you can't play the cards that you had anymore, you're counterfeited.
Absolutely.
Call the Secret Service. Go to jail. All right, Robert, thanks for sending that in. And send us your address to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And we will send out to you a lovely set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards from our good friends at greatpokerhands.com. And everybody else, send us a mailbag. And if we use it, we send you swag.
You know, last week on the one-minute mystery spinoff, Ride Along with Columbo, it was part 9, and the blinds were 120 and 240, and they had antes. The under the gun limped, which means that you were probably playing in this tournament.
Ah, very good.
So I'm putting, 9-8. I'm putting this guy on ace queen, not 9-8. But, but we decided to raise to 960 in middle position with king queen offsuit. The flop came 5 of hearts, 7 of spades, 9 of diamonds, and our lone opponent checked. So we checked behind him. The turn was a 7 of clubs, and our opponent checks yet again. We have 2,500, and our opponent has about 7,700. Do we check or do we bet, and how much if we do bet? Scott?
Danger! Danger! That's really old school, that reference. That's even older school than me.
Yeah, I don't think you were. Were you even around for that show?
Not even on TBS was I around for that show. I Dream of Jeannie, sure, but I don't even know where it's from.
Lost in Space.
Lost in Space, there we go.
Young Will Robinson.
Danger, danger. I'm going to take the free card here. Hopefully I can hit a king or queen, and then I can probably call any river bet safely, depending on how big it is. I just, you know, I don't know where we are.
Yeah.
And this doesn't look like a board that really could have hit the under the gun, but, you know, he could have overpair or higher cards than we do, and I don't know. I don't feel safe betting out here.
Well, I'm going to call you out here.
Are you?
And here's what I'm going to call you out for. I recall a show a long time ago when we were just, you know, little saplings.
Lost in Space. Yeah, we just talked about it.
Yeah. And you had said something about to the effect of when you've got position and it gets checked around twice to you.
Okay.
If you don't bet out, then what are you waiting for? And you went on this like mini tirade, you know, as much as you can. Now I realize this is a heads up hand, but it was checked twice to you. Now maybe you evolved as a poker player since then, and you don't feel that way anymore. But wouldn't you have bet there now to at least see some? And I'm not saying I would have, because basically my reaction from last week was, how did we not bet on the flop? Ugh. That's what I had written down in our notes. So, yeah, I guess I check again as well, and I hope to get a free showdown and maybe even hit one of my cards. But I'm just wondering, for you, why didn't you bet there? I thought you would usually bet there.
You know, that's a good point. And, you know, maybe I would have. I just, you know.
Okay.
I don't know.
I mean,
you know, our opponent has a lot more chips than us. We don't have a lot here, really. I mean, I guess we have, 10 big blinds left?
Yeah.
You know, we're almost in the point now where I want to have a hand before I commit chips. Mm. And, but, you know.
I just feel like if you and I are, I realize it's a tournament, not a cash game, but I just feel like if we were in our home game and you raised and I called and you had position on me and I checked to you after that flop with that, those hands, those cards that you had, I felt like you would bet there, and then if you did, and I checked again, I know you would bet there.
Well, against you, of course.
Well, I know, but you know, I still feel like that's the way you would have played it, and it just, you know, I just think that when you read it and you have time to think about it, you're changing your mind. But I think you bet there.
Yeah. All right. Maybe I would. Maybe I would have.
Well, the guys on the forum.
But you know, the pot is now what? There's 18, 19, about 2,000 in the pot. So.
Yeah.
You know, any bet I got to make there is going to really commit me to this hand, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's true, too. If you bet about a grand, you're betting almost 50% of your stack anyway.
Yeah, so I don't know.
That's a good point, too. But you could put a feeler bet out of, like, 300 or 500 or something. You know?
Yeah, maybe like a min bet just to see where I am. I like doing that. Actually, I do that a lot.
Yeah. Well, like I was saying before, that the forum was united in checking because we had checked the flop and our story won't add up. But I disagree with that. I mean, I think a lot of people try to trap with a big hand. I think if you had aces, you know, and some people would check that flop to see if the guy was playing something like ace-nine suited or something, and
right.
Or had tens and thought he was safe. You know, I would definitely bet. A lot of people wait to bet their their big hand on the turn. It's you don't want them to get to the river for free. So I disagree with the checking, I think, even though I probably would have checked because I was a wuss. But I think that – not that I agree with checking or disagree with it. I'm just saying that when they say our story won't add up, that I disagree with. So
yeah, you know, I have to agree with you on that too. I don't know what story we didn't put out there. I mean, we raised
– right.
You know, then we check when there's low cards. So, I mean, I guess maybe what they're saying is they kind of putting us like on an ace king kind of hand.
Exactly.
And that this board just didn't hit us, so that the story doesn't add up there. But, you know, ace king might be good here, so.
Yeah. All right, well, let's see what happens and then listen in on part 10.
Greetings. This is Columbo from pokerwannabe.blogspot.com, and welcome to episode 10 of Ride Along with Columbo. In our last hand, we set up our limper to take a fall when we have king-queen, but the flop was all undercards. We both checked the flop, and then he checked again when a second seven paired the board. Now, I think I know my player at this point, but I played it safe, and my first check was defensive, in case he really wanted me to bet. But after two checks from this player, it's punishing time again. I bet 1,200 or half the pot, and my limp caller folds. Seems like a simple hand, but we have exploited our limp caller's leak and picked up nearly 2,500 chips.
Sometimes the answer is the obvious one.
Still at the same 120-240-25 level with 8,500 in chips when we get dealt a big hand in early position. Under the gun folds and under the gun plus one, that's me, ace of clubs, ace of spades.
It's just business as usual, sir.
A buy-the-book raise would be about 750 to 800. How do you want to play it?
Don't you ever get tired? Tired of constantly getting the red carpet treatment?
Good evening.
Tired of having all your worries taken care of and knowing that there's a place reserved for you?
Right this way, sir.
Of course you don't. That's why you join PokerStars. After all, our VIP club awards over $3.6 million worth of major on- and offline tournament entries every month. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out more about why other reward schemes just don't open as many doors. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
It is the official national pastime of Anti-Up. It is Raz.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Champions Invitational, isn't it?
It is. It's kind
of
like
one of those special things, like the $40,000 stimulus special.
Yeah, yeah. It's more like that than it is Champions because a lot of us haven't experienced that yet. But it is one of our favorite games, although lately it's been frustrating us and we tend to like moan and groan when somebody says, let's play Raz at the home game. But
I'm really looking forward to playing Hose usually now instead of Horse because Raz is just driving crazy. But coming up, our next Apes event, October 7th, is Raz. And of course, we will have a wonderfully competitive, no one sitting out, everybody we know, free roll on Wednesday night at 9 p.m. All that stuff is 9 p.m. Eastern on PokerStars.com. And all the information is at antiupmagazine.com/apes. And as usual, Before this free roll, we like to be powerful. Very powerful.
I can go on record this time and say these are power tips. These are power tips. And of course, you know, Mitchell Kogert, one of our listeners, wrote a very excellent Raz book. And you should check that out because it's got a great system and it's real simple and it's not that long. And what was the name of it again? Play Raz, something.
Play Raz and win the Annie Up tournament.
Something like that.
That might have been
something like that. But it was a good book. I have it. We wrote a review on it, and so pick that up too as well. Of course, you're not going to get it in time for the show, for the Apes event. But
you can run out to your bookstore, maybe.
You might be able to. You know, today. Run out today and get it. Get it right now. Go to Barnes and Noble.
Exactly.
But I'll let you start with the tips, and we'll see how it goes from there.
All right. It's not stud eight, Chris.
Boy, that's, you know what, you just have such a grasp for the obvious.
I just dig deep.
Captain Obvious!
I dig deep and find the little gems. That
hey, you know what, it's not Hold'em either. It's not Omaha either.
That's my second tip. Alright, it's not stud eight, so somebody has to win every hand. And while you definitely want an eight or better hand, don't get hung up on it either, especially when your head's up against an opponent who is also bricking. And when I say brick, I mean getting high cards that don't help as I'm trying to, you know, wean myself off of poker lingo.
No, when you say don't get hung up on it, you mean don't get hung up on having to make an eight.
is what you're saying, right?
In other words,
you can make a 9 or a 10 or even a jack, and it still could be good.
Right.
It doesn't have to be a qualifier. So, yeah,
you
don't get hung up on using the 8.
The lowest hand.
Yeah, the lowest hand works.
You could have 4 kings, and as long as your opponent has 4 aces right?
No, because those aces are low.
Oh, okay.
So you can't have 4 kings and win. All right. It's going to be pretty tough.
You could have 4 queens. As long as your opponent has 4 kings, you're going to win. How's that? But no. I think if people get, they get that paint up card or something at some point, they're like, my hand's ruined. Well, it's not ruined if, your opponent has similar stuff like that.
Yeah. All right, well, my first tip is, remember Pierce Brosnan and the Thomas Crown Affair?
I remember Rene Russo and the Thomas
Crown Affair. I know. For some reason, I don't know why you keep remembering her, but whatever. But, he was like a master thief, and that's what you have to become. You have to become Thomas Crown or Pierce Brosnan or whoever that guy was in that movie.
So do you have a power tip where you can actually steal the paint like he did? That would be a power
tip.
No,
but you steal from people who have the paint.
Oh, okay,
that's what it is. You steal because they have painting. And he stole paintings in the movie. So if you're like to the right of the bring-in, and this is pretty obvious, but be prepared to steal when it folds around to you. When you're playing online, just because you don't like your card, don't ever click auto-fold.
Never,
because
Rez.
They
never
fold around to you. And you could steal, like Thomas Crown.
Absolutely.
So just be prepared to steal, because this is a game of bluffing and a game of stealing. Make sure that you do not auto-click fold.
Exactly. I like that one.
Doesn't work for live. You don't click anything when you're playing live. But
still,
online,
it's the same thing. I mean, you look at that. Oh, boy, I've got a jack. Oh, all right, I'm done with this hand. But,
it folds around you for some reason.
The bringer's got a king. Why not take a shot, right?
Absolutely.
Why not? All right, my tip number two. Be aware when a quote-unquote, air quotes, good card hurts your opponent. If it's a multi-way pot and there was a lot of 3rd Street or 4th Street action, don't necessarily get scared away, Chris. An opponent gets an ace, deuce, or tray, it very well may have paired him or her.
Yeah, just don't take that too far. A lot of players in our home game are like, I know that paired you. And then they just go the whole way, and it didn't pair them, and they lost like 6 bets.
But see, that's the great thing about these tips, is you can play them from both sides.
Yes, yes.
So, if you're jamming with, like, deuce 4-6 or something, and that ace comes up, then somebody goes, oh, you better than ace. And you're like, oh, yeah, you're right. But, no, I see a lot of times I think people are like, oh, man, the board, the guy keeps, oh, my God, he keeps catching. And it does. He catches good cards on the outside. But on the inside, he's suffering like a clown.
All right, well, I'm going to stick with the visual media theme and say 8 is enough. No, it's not Dick Van Patten and 145 daughters.
Adam Rich, right?
He was Adam Rich. Remember that haircut? That dome haircut?
No, I had that for years. In fact, that
probably. Good Lord. Do not show me that photo. The business is kaput. But a made 8 is a favor over any drawing hand. But if you are the drawer up against the made 8, do not jam because you are a dog. So people think, oh, I got ace, deuce, three, king, ace, deuce, three, king, four, whatever, and he's got an 8, but I can... No, don't jam it, because you're still a dog, believe it or not. Now, if they had a made 9 or a rough 9, you probably are even money, maybe even a favorite. But a made 8, don't jam the pot if you're drawn against a made 8. And if you have a made 8, jam it, baby, because the odds of them beating you are in your favor, not theirs.
Jam it, baby. I'm getting that on a t-shirt, I think. All right, my final tip, don't get crazy with paint. And if you've seen my porch, you know that I...
Your whole house.
It's a very good tip,
Your whole house. I just got crazy. You're crazy with paint.
Even if it's buried, you have a big hill to climb. Even if you plan to bluff your way to victory, play the situation, sure, but to be patient enough to wait for better ones. And, of course, when I'm talking about paint, I'm talking about face cards, which are the kiss of death in Raz.
They are. They are bricks. They are bananas. They are whatever you want to call them. They're just a big pain in the butt.
I do see a lot of people with, like, hands like ace, deuce, king or something, and they're like, they just kind of, like, ignore the fact that king's there. Like, he's going to go away. Like, he's going to walk somewhere, and he's not going to go anywhere until you get your 6th card. Until you have the 6th card, that guy is hanging out there and ruling your hands.
And, my next tip kind of goes off of your tip, too, because I'm going to tell you, stop defending. Just because you're perfect or near perfect in the hole... Doesn't mean you need to be a hero here, which always happens in our home game.
No, don't be a hero!
especially if your door card is like 2 or 3 levels higher than the person who's raising or completing. Just get out of there and move on, man. It's one hand. All you did was pay the bring-in. get out of it. You know, all, more times than not, you're going to lose a lot more than you're going to win trying to defend. You know, and also gets back to your other tips too about, you know, you're giving away what's in the hole,
right?
By playing the king or the queen, you're saying that I am probably perfect. I have two wheel cards.
Yep.
So if another wheel card comes, the likelihood of you pairing it is probably pretty good, and it's just not worth it, man. Move on, let go.
But no, definitely Raz is that game where machismo.
Yeah.
Is often not rewarded.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a tough transition, really, for people to go to Hold'em where they know they can, they got some, you know, tricks and stuff, and they can push people off hand. You're not going to push a lot of people off of hand and Raz.
No.
Not a lot of mystery out there.
No. Especially if you have a king showing, because you know you can't beat them until Fifth Street,
right,
unless they pair or become another king, and you can't push them off of hand because you can't bet enough. So just let it go. Let it go. Let go of the feelings inside. All right, that's it. Good luck in the Apes event. And
yeah, again, it's October 7th.
Yep.
The free roll is Wednesday night, September 23rd.
And all the details can be found at antiupmagazine.com/apes, A-I-P-S.
This is Daniel Negreanu of FullContactPoker.com. You're listening to Ante Up.
Once again, Chris, welcome back our good friend, Lee Childs. Lee, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me back.
All right. You dressed today?
I am dressed.
Excellent.
It's like 3 weeks in a row.
Excellent.
you guys are pulling back the curtain on our little Wizard of Oz here. But thanks. All right, cool. And again, we'll remind everyone of Lee's tremendous credentials. I made a final table of the main event of the World Series a couple years back. Found it and is the lead instructor of AcumenPoker.net. And a wonderful, affable pro at Lock Poker Pro, or Lock Poker Now. Sorry, look at that. I tried so hard not to screw it up, but
you
I just can't.
Almost got through it, man.
I'm so flustered when I'm around Lee. You know,
you should write it down and tape it to your, you know, your monitor.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's
good. Notes, you know, that kind of thing.
But I've got all the other stuff I've taped to my monitor right now, so kind of gets all jumbled up. But once again, Lee, we appreciate you being on the show, and appreciate the fact that I always screw up your intro.
Well, it is hand of the week, so you're just getting started early.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. See, if I just screw up the intro, then maybe I'll get the hand of the week right.
Yeah, good point.
I'll pause for laughter there, because we know that's not going to happen. Yeah. All right, we like when we get hands from our longtime listeners, and this one comes from Theron over in Pearland, Texas. He goes by CT Sharp 74. I believe that's his Poker Stars handle now. He has a different handle on those other rooms. You know, Theron's been with us for a long time, Chris.
Yeah, he's been around a while, and used to always rail us, too, when we were playing on other sites and stuff, so it's good to have him back.
All right, he is playing in a cash home game now instead of online. Stakes are 50 cents, $1. It's getting to the end of the session, he says, and we always know the best hands of the week come at the end of the session. They're playing seven-handed. There are a few bust-outs. It's down to four-handed now.
Cool.
Yeah. Short-handed. He's sitting with $75. The villain has about 180. And Theron's on the button. He has a pretty tight image, showing down some big hands, playing maybe half the hands as the rest of the table. He's up $25 for the session, guys.
Sweet.
All right. The under the gun raises to 350, kind of a 3X there under the gun. He says the under-the-gun player is a loose aggressive, is crafty, and he's shorthanded. He plays the players, not the cards. Our hero just took a big pot off him when he caught him bluffing, and now it gets around. I have to say our hero is next on the button with King.
Shove. Oh, wait, that was last week, sorry.
That was last week.
And that was Florida. Sorry, okay.
Texas you can just raise, right?
Texas you can just raise, yeah.
Nice.
Oh, it's a home game. You can do whatever you want.
Well, we're deep enough to raise. So, yeah, we got our position. We're definitely going to re-raise, especially against a crafty player who, you know, who's pretty good. So we're definitely going to raise here.
Yeah, there's no reason to play it sneaky or anything. Let's go ahead and pop it up at least, you know, three times what he bet. So 10, 11 bucks, somewhere around there.
All right, I'm not going to disagree with my good friend Lee, who obviously is far more knowledgeable in poker than I am. But when you say there's no reason play this crafty, the fact that he's a, you know, a loose aggressive player, plays a lot of stuff, isn't this a hand you can trap with a little bit?
Sure, you can trap, but I want to raise for value. I mean, that's I just I really like raising here. I don't like these. When you play tricky against these little crafty, loose aggressive players, that's usually when they flop two pair against your big hands and things like that. So, okay. You know, I prefer to go ahead and raise here for value to get heads up against this tricky player. If I just call, both the blinds call now, I'm potentially going to look at a four-way pot with kings. You know, and you just, if he's got a like an underpair, or, you know, just really any other random cards, you're probably going to be about an 80-20 favorite. And for every other player in the pot, that's going to go down about 10%, right? So if you add those two players, now you're looking at like 60-40 with a hand as powerful as kings. I just don't like putting myself in that situation. So sure, there are reasons to do it. I just think there are more reasons to raise. And so I'm going to pop it up here.
Ah, good. See, I just wanted to get you to admit that there was a reason. My job is done here. Chris, you take over from now.
My eyes are glazed over. I think I fell asleep in there. All those numbers, I don't know what that meant, but I'll just take his word for it.
All right. So we're re-raising. What are we re-raising to, kids?
11.
That's fine.
11? Really, Chris? You said 11?
Yeah, $11.
All right, that's cool. You're the only one in this menage a trois hand of the week here that doesn't have the notes in front of him, and that's exactly what our hero did. So.
That's cool.
Well played. Right. So the good thing about this is on the flop, no matter what happens, you can't go, well, I would have played it differently pre-flop, so now I'm backtracking. So. I like this. All right, and Lee, you sound like you're happy with 11, too.
Yep.
All right, very good. Small blind who is passive, calls, big blind folds, you under the gun, calls, three-handed, $34 in the pot, flop comes, 2, 5, 7, rainbow.
I don't think you can ask for a better flop.
Oh, you could ask for two kings.
No, I mean, a better flop doesn't hit our hand, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a good flop. We like the flop.
All right, the small blind checks and the under the gun checks, it's all up to us. What do we do?
Well, as Lee would say, I think, he likes to be consistent with his betting. So he would like to bet anywhere between half and two-thirds the pot. So there's $33 in there. Is that what you said, 33?
34.
So two-thirds of the pot would be $22. So somewhere between $20 and $25 maybe. That's what I would do.
All right, thanks, guys. You don't need me anymore. it was fun doing this. And, hope to see you around.
It only took us 6 weeks to get Lee off of here. Very good. Well done.
Is that about right, Lee?
The motives are finally uncovered. absolutely. I'm going to bet here. I'm going to bet whether I hit or don't hit, whether I like it or not. You're in four-handed to begin with, and now you're just in a three-handed pot. Three-way pot in position. It's a great board for you, and I'm betting whether I like this board or don't like this board. And I feel pretty strongly that I would still have the best hand here, and so I'm betting for value as well.
All right. How about?
What does Daron do?
Go ahead, Chris.
No, I was going to say what does Daron do?
Well, how about we check here? Anybody want to support checking here?
No. Not a chance.
Well, our hero does, all right? So let's be nice to him. He's trying to induce a bluff from the end of the gun player, and he, at the same time, he's not real worried about the passive small blind, as that player is very predictable.
I don't like inducing bluffs when I'm last to act. I like to induce bluffs when I know that they're behind me, and I check. Totally different when another card's coming that can beat me. So I hate doing that. That's just me, but I don't know.
Yeah, you really have no information about what these guys' hands are at all. And, you know, sure, you're not scared of any draws, and, you know, there's no obvious draws that are out there or anything, but you just need these, you know, your big hands don't come around that often, and when they do, you need to bet them for value. You need to try to win some big pots with it. It's just better to bet here. You can't check when you've got your big hands and then, you know, fire away when you have nothing.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I'm betting here 100% of the time in this spot.
All right. The turn is a four. So we have all four suits on the board now. Deuce, 5, 7, 4. Small blind checks again. But now the end of the gun takes the bait, bets out $15.
Well, we would have bet more than 15 on the flop. So, right? And I mean, now there's 15 more in the pot to play against. So, I would definitely raise here.
I call.
Oh, you call?
Yeah, I'm going to call. I mean, I don't, now it's, you know, there is a possible straight. There's, you know, four possible sets now that all could jive with the action here. You know, if he's a, if, you know, this kind of loose aggressive player who actually did hit the flop and was slow playing it, hoping to check raise or, you know, trying to milk us there, then, you know, now he's come alive on the turn. If he has air, then when you raise, he's just going to go away, right? So if he has air, then I want him to keep betting into me. So I don't, I'm not sure what we'd accomplish. You know, the only thing is if he's going to pay us off with like a seven now, because he thinks we don't have anything since we checked the flop. So I don't think there's a lot of value in raising in this spot, because if he has air, he goes away. And if he has pretty much any piece of this that isn't two pair or better, he's probably going to have to go away. So I'd if I'm good here, then again, I'm not really afraid of too many other cards that could come. So if I'm good, then I just want to call and then let him go ahead and bet into me on the river. That's probably my best way of getting more money out of him if I have him beat right now.
I was thinking of a min raise just to get more money.
Why?
Out of him. Get more money out of him.
Yeah, I think, but a min raise is really strong. A min raise will look more like a set to him. I don't think a worse hand than what you have can call if you raise here.
Okay, well, that's why I was trying to figure out, this guy's a loose aggressive player, and he said he likes to play the player rather than the card, so I don't know if he's just making a move on the turn, and I'm letting him know, you know, I want to see. Maybe he does have A7, he thinks it's good, and he was trying to trap. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if he has A7 and you raise him, then he might just shut down on the river. So I like just calling, because if I'm good, then I want him to bet into me again on the river. And I don't, again, you know, I'm sitting here with a one pair hand now.
Yeah.
Against two opponents, I still have this other guy left to act, who's, all we know is he's checked twice, and he had called out of the blind. He can have really any two cards. So I really like just calling in this spot. With this other player behind, and because I think if I raise, all the hands that I'm beating probably go away, unless he's got something like eights or nines or something like that.
Well, what about the guy behind you? That's the other thing for the raise too. Is what if he has a drawing hand now that for $15, and if we call, now he's got the odds to call the draw to it.
Yeah, I mean, that's okay. We've only got one pair. Sure, it's kings, but there's no difference in having kings right now and having nines right now.
Right.
So, except for the fact that maybe, you know, that we're beating tens and jacks and queens.
Right, right.
But you know what I mean? So, you know, if this guy does call and then the river brings another low card and now all of a sudden the blind comes alive and bets out, then I'm fine just folding, because I've got one pair on a, you know, if it's like a six on the end, then the guy would only need a three in his hand, or, you know, if an eight comes on the end, then he only needs a six in his hand. So I'm fine trying to play kind of a small pot here with just one pair. You know, since we didn't bet on the flop and keep control of the pot, we've now given up that control. I've got one pair on the turn. I want to try to get to showdown as cheaply as possible.
Well, now I'm dying to know what happens.
Well, I'm going to pause a little bit here, Chris, because I think you made an interesting point, because this is what always trips me up. I would be worried about the straight from the small blind, but when you look at the hand, I just can't put the small blind on anything that would come close to a straight there. I mean, he called after an under-the-gun raise and then a re-raise on the button pre-flop, and he's a passive player, according to this guy. I just can't imagine him calling with anything in that wheel.
Well, I was thinking he could have pocket sixes.
Yeah, he could have like sixes, threes, or eights, or something.
Okay, all right, good
or
point.
Even eights.
All right. So, Chris, you're still dying to hear what happens.
Yeah, I'm dying.
And our hero raises to 25, leaving just 24 behind.
Like I said, I was going to min raise 15 more, and if I bet 30, then I would still have 34 left, I guess. But you know, if you just call, I don't know what happens. So that's what he did. I can't really say that's not right, because is it the guy bet 15? No, what do you bet when the guy
bet out? 15, so...
And he raised 25 then, more, right?
I guess 25 more on top.
So that's 40, yeah. See that? I would have just done a min raise and see if I can get the small blind out and go heads up with this guy who's obviously really loose and aggressive and probably doesn't have me beat, but could have me
well,
beat.
Yeah, and also raising here, I think it's the 25 is a weird bet, I think, because, I mean, either you got a min raise, like Chris is saying, so you leave some behind, but now you're leaving 24 behind. Why not just shove it there?
Yeah, you bet 50% of a stack.
I mean, are you going to fold on the river to anything for 24 left?
Right.
I mean, I'm asking. I mean,
no, I agree. I couldn't, if I bet that much, I couldn't get away from the hand then, so I might as well shove it.
Yeah, so. if you do a min raise, or even if you do this and he comes back over the top, then I think you got to let it go. I think he's got to have better than one pair, but that would be kind of my only reason for doing any kind of min raise is if the player, if either the small blind or the guy who was under the gun actually came back over the top of you, that you were actually going to let it go to save those chips. Otherwise, I'd rather just put it all in. Yeah. If you're not going to fold, if you really think you're good. But I just think there's no way to know that you're good. You've got one pair. You got to think about the relative strength of your hand, not the fact that you had kings pre-flop. You know, there's a lot of things have happened now, and now you just have one pair on a, you know, there's four sets that can beat you, and lots of unlikely two pairs, and, you know, unlikely straights, like with an ace three or six three or something like that. So, I mean, the hands are actually unlikely, but if somebody's able to come back over the top of you, then I got to think they've got at least two pair here.
Yeah.
Well, the small blind must have folded because he's not even mentioned the rest of the hand. But the villain goes into the tank for about 10 seconds and then says, all in!
See, that's the thing, is now you can't fold. I mean, you can't fold now. What'd he bet? And he has 20 bucks left.
Yeah, he's got 24 left, playing $50. I mean, he's still got 24 big blinds, though. You can't possibly be ahead here. So I think I fold. But I mean, what can this guy have? This guy can't have a hand. You're drawing to at best two outs now.
I think you
got to save this money. If you're gonna raise and leave yourself something behind, then I think you got to fold if he's able to come back over the top, because I just don't think he can do this with like ace seven. It's got to be, you know, 5-4s. 5-4s, probably the most likely two-pair kind of hand, any of those sets, and then, of course, the unlikely straights. But unless for some reason you really feel strongly that he's capable of actually coming back over the top with all this action with 8s, 9s, 10s, jacks, or queens, that's the only way you could kind of justify the call there, I think.
Yeah, I'm going broke. There's no way I'm folding for 6-1 on my money with kings to a loose aggressive player there. I just can't do it. I think of the loose aggressive players I play with, and they could easily have king 7 or ace 7 in that spot. I mean, it's just when they're real loose aggressive and they're raising on the gun after being caught in a bluff, and he's, you know, I just think he's probably got, I mean, I don't have the information on this hand, so I don't know what this guy has, but when I play with the loose aggressive players I play with, they would easily go all in with 10s there.
Well, he's also saying this guy is crafty, and, you know, it sounds like he's got a good shorthanded game. And usually, I mean, this is actually something that I've been working on a lot of, you know, kind of some loose aggressive, what appears to be loose aggressive play in my own game. And it's, you know, it's kind of the, you know, more of a small ball type approach where you give an illusion of being much more loose aggressive than you are, because you're only playing big pots when you actually have a really strong hand. So you're in a lot of pots, you're calling a lot in position, and you're raising a lot in position, but you're only playing really big pots when you actually have a big hand. So if this guy is actually a good, you know, he says he's crafty and plays the players, not his cards, you know, I got to think that this would be a spot that he's got better than one pair. And I don't care if it's $2, if I know that I'm beat. Obviously, if it's $2 and it's this big of a pot, I'm going to have the right odds to chase for my other king, but you know what I mean.
Well, the other thing, too, that I think we might be forgetting is that it's the last hand. So no matter how many big blinds you have left, doesn't matter. I'm not going to go home with 24 bucks. You know, I mean, I'm thinking I'm going to go home with 150 or I'm going to go home with zero. I just can't. I'm not playing any more hands tonight, and I don't know what the next home game I play is going to be. So I can't get away from this hand here, I don't think.
And I'm going to take the argument that we play one long session.
Yeah, I know.
And we need to save that money when we know we're beat.
All right. Well, 6-1 on my money. I got a call. So, I mean, I just got a call in this home game with this guy. I mean, I'm probably beat. You're right. It's probably beat, but I just have to.
6-1, but you've only got two outs, so you're only 4% to hit your hand.
Well, that's if you know your beat.
All right, boys, take it outside.
Of course, if I had the hand in front of me, I could take a much different stance as well. I don't get that luxury.
Oh, man. All right, well, our hero does call just like my good friend Chris would have done. And the loose-aggressive villain turns over 3-6 offsuit.
There's the unlikely hand that no one would have. Raises under the gun with 3-6 off.
He raised from the cutoff, though, you know.
No,
I know. Four-handed.
He raised under the gun.
The 3-6 was under the gun. Raised
under the gun, raised.
3-6 and then called re-raise. And then...
But under the gun is the cutoff.
Oh, yeah, so I know.
Okay, all right, that's true. All right, yeah.
Even so, I mean...
I was going to get away from using these terms, wasn't I, Chris? And this is what happened.
This is why you don't check the flop, all right? That's basically... Let's get back to the actual hand. This is why you don't check the flop. You bet a healthy amount and see if he really wants to have the balls to try to call for a gut shot there. Instead, you let a loose, aggressive guy catch up, and you shouldn't have. So now me and I are arguing over nothing.
Just like an old married couple.
Yeah.
Well, not that it matters, but the river is a 7. Game's over. Our hero goes broke. But there is a twist, Chris.
Uh-oh.
And the twist is, according to Theron, he was the loose, aggressive player in this hand.
So he had 3-6?
The hero was the villain.
See, now this totally throws off all of my analysis because I know how Theron plays. Wow.
See, and I like this twist because, I bet more people are going to be doing this because, you know, when they type in the hand of the week and they're like, wait a minute, I might have been a real donkey in this hand. How about I switch it around?
Yeah.
How about I make the other guy the donkey?
Now, what I want to know is, does this make him the guy who got caught in the bluff now instead of catching the guy in the bluff?
Yes, it is. Yes, it does.
Wow.
See, actually, the truth is, I was the guy with the 3-6, and Theron was the guy with the king, so I know he's making this up now.
Well, tell him what he wins, Scott.
All right, Theron, thank you so much for sending us a hand of the week. You've won a lovely $10 online staking package courtesy of getastake.com. And please let me know when you're playing so I can re-raise you with your 3-6 and win all that money that you just been staked. But remember to send your hand of the week to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And once again, we always, always are happy when Lee Childs joins us to argue with Chris.
Thanks for having me, guys.
It's like having my wife on the show. I'm Chris
Cassenza.
I'm Chris Cassenza.
And I'm Scott Locke.
And we'll see you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.